Welcome back to another great episode of Comedians in Bed. And as always, I got another great comedian here for you. You know, this is the show where comedians can be comedians, man. I'm still not really sure what that means, but it sounds like a professional thing to say as a host. So, man, I got another great guest here for you today. I'm eager to learn, eager to see what he has to say, man. He's very funny. He's very hilarious, very talented, man. He's doing it all on his own. As you know, you got to do as a comedian, and he's Ohio bred. So I'm glad that we got him here on the show here today. Please, everybody, give it up for my guy, Michael Turner, everybody.
What is good?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good, man. Yeah, Ohio. Hey, we got a different hustle in Ohio, man. You know, that shit travels. I'm not there anymore, but I always think I got a distinct advantage because I'm from where I'm from. So,
man, the hustle. I mean, you're already out of Ohio, but the hustle for me is to get out of Ohio like that.
Yes. No, I was born and raised in Cincinnati, and then I turned 18 and went, like, I graduated and shit, and then I had an opportunity to go to Arizona State. They were accepting everybody. And I didn't know anything about debt or anything like that. I was like, man, I'm going to get out of here, get out of Cincinnati. And God bless. I love being from where I'm from, but I also think that it's sometimes a place that can hold you down. There are people there that will try to tell you that this is all you need to be. And, you can look beyond Ohio sometimes, but it's a beautiful place to be from, and real ones, you can make it there too. You can hustle your ass off there too and make it. So,
man, what I love, I tell everybody, like, Cincinnati has, like, the best scene. Like, y'all have so many, like, headlining comedians. Like, it's so crazy to me. Like, I'm still young in the game. I didn't know that, like, y'all was pumping them out like that. Like, it's crazy. Like, how much pride do you have when you say you from, like, Cincinnati?
So it's funny. So I'm from Cincinnati, right? But I didn't start comedy in Cincinnati. But okay. I was the funniest motherfucker in high school. You know what I mean? So I did. But, like, my humor was formed in Cincinnati for sure. And I'm always very prideful to say that I'm from there, because when I do go back, I obviously come back. I got family back there and shit. So I do a lot of shows there. I'm always blown away at how many funny motherfuckers are there. Like, and just living there, and they're happy. Yeah. And some of them own property. I'm like, damn, I might have had it all messed up. Like, they got a beautiful wife and family and shit.
Yeah, man.
They're happy, bro. It was crazy. Yeah. But no, I'm always very prideful to be where I'm from. And it's cool having not started there, but meeting all these Cincinnati comedians. And they've luckily taken me in. A lot of them fuck with me, which is cool. But it's really impressive to see how many it's impressive, but also it's not shocking. Like, dude, I grew up, the people that I grew up with in Cincinnati are the core of where my humor came from. We're some funny people. We're very interesting. It's a very interesting city, because it's not like the rest of Ohio. We actually don't really claim Ohio in Cincinnati. I don't say I'm from Ohio. I'm from Cincinnati. Well, it's no slight to the rest of Ohio, but, like, Ohio doesn't fuck with us either.
Yeah. Like,
you know what I mean? Like, they don't claim us. Like, everybody else is a Browns fan. I'm like, nah, Bengals. Everybody's a Buckeyes fan. I'm like, we got the Bearcats. I grew up with Kenya Martin, and, like, you know, it's an interesting perspective. We're always very, like, we are who we are, and we don't need y'all.
I feel like people from Cincinnati, like, even the further down south Ohio you go, y'all talk so different from everybody else. Like, it's like, we can't claim y'all. Like, y'all talk like y'all from down south a little bit.
Yeah, people tell me I got a twang or something. I don't know what it is. I don't know where, you know, it's probably also just, you know, being from Cincinnati, I am who I am, but then you get into the hip hop culture. There's some cool ass black people down there. I'm just a white dude, but you're around it so much. I definitely picked up some lingo. Like, I remember I was 15 working with, like, four other just older black dudes. And you just pick, I'm like, damn, that was cool what he said. Oh, that was slick what he said. And then all of a sudden I'm talking how I'm talking. And it's like,
So how was the culture shock when you went out to Arizona? I mean, you come from Cincinnati, you got hills, you got snow out there, you got a desert, and you got sun all day. Like, how was the culture shock?
That was all crazy. And then, so to talk about what we're talking about, being from Cincinnati, I was like, everybody's like, what are you saying? Sometimes I was, like, I feel like when we go back to Cincinnati, like we have this language that makes sense to us.
Yeah.
And then if I meet five other Cincinnati people, we can have a whole different conversation than anybody else. But when I go, when I went to Arizona State is the school I went to. So I was in Phoenix, and I remember I was just clowning some chick or one of my boys is hooking up with some girl or something like that. I don't know. I said something slick where I was like, man, she got a grill like a dump truck. And I was like, or no, a grill like a Mack truck, I should say. A grill like a Mack truck. Talking about how she got a fucked up face, right? And everybody's like, what'd you just say? What? Like, I was like, I don't know. I'm just making fun of somebody in a way that I know. But the desert was weird too. Not having green is weird.
Yeah, yeah. I go out to LA like once a year and I go out to Coachella and stuff. And the more I go out there, I'm like, man, this is so different from back home. Like, I feel like I can like really breathe, I guess. Like when I'm in LA, you know, a little bit. Like, I don't know. When I'm in a democratic state, I feel more at ease, if that makes sense.
Oh, if you, I mean, yes, 100%. I mean, LA is a black city.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cincinnati's a black city too, but it's definitely like, there's a white part and a black part still,
which yeah.
There's at least like a mentality towards it, but they all cohabitate. But LA is like LA, the white people here, you know, there's more Mexican people here. There's a lot of black people for sure. And the culture is very, it's not, you know, there's pockets that are white hipsters, but for the most part, LA is, it's a very diverse city for sure.
How old are you?
I'm about to be 37 next week or some shit.
Okay, well, happy early birthday.
Thank you. Yeah,
happy early birthday.
Sag season, dog.
No, the reason I asked was because so you're from Cincinnati and I'm from Columbus. Like,
okay,
so many people, like Cincinnati and Cleveland are like the two most popular cities in the United States and definitely in Ohio. Like, nobody even knows Columbus. Like, do y'all even think about us down there? Like, are we even mentioned in conversations? Like,
I mean, it's so, you know what's funny is people are always like, man, Columbus is shockingly ghetto. I know that. That's because you always think about Columbus like Ohio State, but I'm like, get off campus. That shit is scary. Like, it is some shit going on in Columbus I didn't know about. But we went up there to party. You know what I mean? When you were 18, some of your homies were already in college. So like, we popped up there to get after it with the Ohio State stuff. But I'm telling you straight up, we don't even think about Cleveland. Like, Cincinnati is Cincinnati. It's very like, it's crazy that is it. But like, man, I know people that straight up have never even flown a plane outside of Cincinnati. You know what I mean? Like, have never left the city unless they've driven to Kentucky by accident and got on the wrong bridge. Like, you know, people, we don't think about Columbus.
No. Yeah, no. The reason I ask, because everybody in Columbus be trying to be like, no matter what like type of like avenue they're in, they're always trying to be like the top one in Columbus. And I'm like, dog, we're in Columbus. Like, nobody's checking for us. You could just relax and just do whatever needs to be done, man. That's right. Crazy.
Yeah.
So now you are a Cincinnati Bengals fan. And are you a Reds fan too?
Bengals, Reds, Bearcats. So my earliest memories.
How do you feel now? Like, Cincinnati is relevant in you know, the world of sports again.
You know what's funny about it is that professional sports, but like growing up, bro, I was a Bearcats fan. We were straight. You know what I mean? Like, it's funny now. It's not the Bearcats as much, but like growing up, it was like we were, you know, number one in the nation, like multiple times throughout my youth, and we were some bad boys. But like, it was always the Bengals and the Reds were just kind of whatever. But you know, they were always the squads that you hoped would get right. And so it is nice. It's interesting not only to have the Bengals doing well, but having a quarterback. We might have the dude, which is kind of crazy to think about. And so that's exciting with Burrow. And then the Reds, bro, the Reds might have the dude, the new dude. Like with, if you're familiar with that squad, but Ellie De La Cruz might be like the new face of baseball. Obviously, it's too early to tell, but like, the early returns are nice. So it's exciting for sure. Anytime I can be more boastful about the city, I love doing that. And it's funny, I'm 11 years in the game. swear, people, I know a bunch of people, you know, just having done comedy for this long. Anytime Cincinnati does anything, man, I'm getting blown up. I'm getting the texts. I'm always top of mind, which is good. I like that.
Yeah.
I like
that. Yeah. I had a Cincinnati related question. I just forgot it that fast, but it's all right. Have you ever been to the I don't know what they call it now. I think it's called Macy's maybe, but the Ribbon Jazz Fest down in Cincinnati. Did you ever go to that?
No. Oh, okay. I know about Jazz Fest, but I never hit it.
Mm-mm. Yeah,
I've heard about it in hip hop songs.
So. My mom's been down there plenty of times. Like that's her go to Cincinnati.
No,
growing up,
it's a very dope music city. Like it's weird, but like the Isley Brothers attended my high school back in the 60s for a couple years, and then like obviously Bootsy Collins is. There's people that. Obviously, the Isley Brothers, if you don't know who they are, then that's more of a you problem. But like there's like foundational hip hop and jazz and like R&B people that are from Cincinnati. I mean, High Tech, if you like modern hip hop, DJ High Tech changed like the way that people knew about underground hip hop. He was the one that was producing the early Mos Def and Talib Kweli and Common and stuff like that, and like those are now artists that you revere and shit, and that was all High Tech sound was something that was monumental. So a lot of music came from Cincy. People just sleep on it, they just don't know.
I feel like a lot of the Ohio sound, but I would say like Cincinnati, I guess you could say, made the Ohio sound is so similar to like the LA sound, and I think that's why I kind of like rock with it. Like if you hear like Kendrick Lamar's all of his albums, like that could be traced back to like Cincinnati sound a little bit.
A lot of, I mean, I always connect our hip hop stuff with High Tech, and High Tech, he produced a lot of East Coast people, but nobody flowed better into the West Coast scene than High Tech did. He did a lot for, I mean, he just did recently one of Anderson .Paak's biggest songs from the Malibu album was DJ High Tech. Yeah. And so, you know, that's what's crazy about Cincy is I always say, like, it's the southernmost state in Ohio. So if you go south, you're in Kentucky. That's right. The south. If you go the other way, you're actually in the deep Midwest, Indiana. And then we're still in the Eastern time zone. So, like, we're all these things. We never knew what we were trying to be, but we got the influences from everybody.
Yeah.
There was a lot of southern influence, too, but we never went deep. Like it never sounded like Houston. It never sounded like Memphis. It sounded like Cincinnati. It never sounded like New York, but all those dudes used the production from it. So, and then the West Coast too. It always had a West Coast flow to it too. He was signed to Aftermath for a little bit. High Tech was.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, I know too much.
No, you're fine. One of the reasons why I brought you on here, man, because, your concept of how you do your IG, I'm not good with ours. The Road Warrior, bam, got it.
Yes, that's a lot of
art. I think it's so like dope. I think it's so like creative. It feels like something that you would come up with like high, and then it like actually works, and then you like see, I wasn't that high, you know. Like, so my question to you is like, how did you come up with it? Because that's really like a good. It's like a good concept, but if people don't know about it, I'll let you describe about it. But like, how did you come up with the concept of the Road Warrior?
So the name, the Road Warrior, actually kind of came last, which is funny. But the concept behind doing it and the act of doing it was something that I have thought about for a couple of years. But to let anybody know that's not as familiar, what I'm doing right now is I'm obviously born in Cincinnati and been a Bengals fan my whole life. And what I'm doing is I coordinated a stand-up comedy tour to go along with their road schedule this year. So I'll be doing a comedy show in every city that the Bengals play a road game. And then over the last like 5-6 years, I've also been doing a lot of videos, NFL tailgates, sports tailgates in general, NBA, stuff like that. And the day of the game, I'll go to each road tailgate, mess with the fans, chop that up, put on YouTube and chop it up into reels and stuff. And so it was really a combination of a lot of things, but to your point, like it's something that, you know, probably I would think me and my brother were probably talking about it like drunkenly one night or something, you know, or just high on the couch thinking like, damn, I should do that. And then luckily it's one of those ideas you don't forget the next day, right? Yeah. But I wanted to do it last year. And to be quite honest, I think I didn't believe in the following or my my pull as much. And so I half-stepped it. And it was funny. It was something I vocalized a lot more this year. And I expressed it to that. I've been very fortunate in being able to get a little bit more visibility. I'm, you know, I think I'm as talented as anybody, but you got to have a lot of, you got to have people, you know, being able to observe it too. And I've gotten more attention this year, and somebody met with me and I talked to them about it and they were like, oh, we could do that. And I was like, could we? And then the belief kind of started rolling a little bit more. And I was able to, it's so funny. Once you really lock in and do it, I have the resources to be able to make it happen from the connections I've made over the years of work and coordinating the tour and stuff like that. Once the ball got rolling, it's hard. It's not easy. What lining it all up is the most difficult thing, but man, if you can just lock in and have an idea like that, people do get energized by it and people are like, oh damn, that's cool. I'd like to get involved in that, whether it be a comedy club or independent show or something like that. So, but yeah, just not waiting for somebody to put it together for me. That's the biggest thing, right?
First of all, I just want to make sure I understand you correctly. This is your first year doing it?
This is my first year doing it.
Bing bong.
Like, that's a lot. Like, how did you like that? I didn't know that was your first. This is your first year doing it. It's so well put together. I have some. Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
So,
but
like,
hey, go on. Yeah, what's your question?
How did you see? I have anxiety, so my anxiety would be too high because it's like I got to plan the plane ticket to make sure I get there on time. I got to book the club. I got to make sure it sells. I got to make sure I go to the game. How to make sure I'm doing, like, how do you put all the, like, what's the first step? Like, what was the first thing that you did? Because that's a lot of pieces.
So the first step was lining up the comedy show, the stand-up show, because without the stand-up shows, then you can't announce the tour, right?
Yeah.
So I really focused on, like, getting all the locations lined up, and it took a little bit. And honestly, I had to announce before we had all the locations lined up, but I was confident that we'd be able to coordinate it, and we have. But Pittsburgh, actually, of all the teams I hate the most, Pittsburgh was the city that gave me the most trouble. Figure that out. So that was the big thing, because what I know I can do is I can do the tailgate video, but I've had to coordinate with a different person in each city sometimes to do the camera. That's been interesting. It's a lot. To just bluntly answer your question, it's a lot. I'm stressed about it every. It's been a lot to undertake. Like this week is a short week. The Bengals are playing the Baltimore Ravens on Thursday Night Football. I don't know when people will be watching this, but like, this is a week where I'll have a 3-4 day turnaround from their. Now I didn't go because they had a home game, but the game to the. This is just, it's just a weird week, right? I have to do the show on a Wednesday. It adds a level of urgency to the week and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's been a lot of work. But this is what I want. You know what I'm saying? It's like whatever you want to do in this career, typically it's going to take some heavy ass lifting. And the beautiful thing is that you're sitting back looking at it and like, damn, he's probably been doing this a lot of years. And I take that as a compliment because that means that I made it look easy. But I'm sitting here telling you this shit has been hard.
It's been very hard. Like, so with every city, did you already have that connection or did you have to like get a reference to be like, hey, can I do a show at your club?
A little bit of both, right? Yeah, like some cities I got like in Baltimore, I'm not as plugged in. I never done a show there, but I got DC connects. DC and Baltimore are pretty much, you know, it'd be like me hitting up somebody in Cincy for a Dayton plug or Columbus plug. So, I'm fortunate to have more visibility on myself. I've got a decent following now after a lot of hard work of putting, you know, social media strategies together. The comedy community it can be very supportive. if you treat it with respect and all that stuff. And my name is my name. And to quote somebody from Baltimore, Marlo Stanfield, but I'm proud to know that my name is attached to respect enough where I was able to get some doors opened up for me that I hadn't opened before. So
are you stressed out when you have to take the shoulder pads with you? Like, do you take the shoulder pads with you?
No, I don't take the shoulder pads. I like that. I like that you think that I got the shoulder pads with me. Nah, dude, you know what I do have to bring though? I got to bring like all this camera equipment. Yeah. And stuff like that.
So my mind is like, what if something gets lost? Like, what's the backup plan? Like,
well, you got to have a backup plan for the backup plan to back up the backup plan. And usually I can have, there's a lot of resources. I'm a very resourceful person. How about that? And I haven't ran into anything, but like, nothing's gotten lost because I don't like to take it. I don't like to check it in as luggage. So I got a video camera case that acts as carry on. So I'm always with it. You always keep that camera equipment with me. And then within each city, I've had to be pretty resourceful and using my network to say, yo, you know, anybody can help me with this, help me with that, stuff like that. It's a lot though, bro. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Now, anxiety for sure.
Now, I would assume that you would be comfortable doing this because you do comedy. I used to do news. So me going up to somebody and asking to do an interview on the street is not that uncommon. How was that, like, how like receptive are people of you when they're doing that? And like, how was that process? Because some people may see a camera and be like, okay, let me go in here, act a fool and be drunk. Like, how do you control that within its, and you know, how do you do crowd work, well, crowd control while in that environment that's not like for comedians?
So years ago, so about four or no, probably 5-6 years ago in Arizona, I was kind of one of the top dogs in the Phoenix comedy scene. And somebody reached out to me from Channel 12 locally, and mm-hmm. they wanted to do something for before Arizona Cardinal games. And so I didn't even know, I had never done it before, but they just asked me to do it and I just did it. And the first time, one thing about me is I did work in sales for a long time, but also like, if you ever see me on stage, I'm very able to just kind of, I could talk to anybody. It's the gift of gab is something that I've always had, which is nice. And I can dive into any conversation with anybody and I'm not scared about that. That's the biggest thing in man on the street stuff. You can't be scared to say the first thing and you can't wait for somebody to come up to you. You kind of just got to barge in. So that's something I don't know if you can teach it by doing it. I was very fortunate to be good at it early on. And then now it started on me doing it for Cardinals games in Phoenix for local Channel 12, which is the NBC affiliate there. So I used to be on a local TV legend in Phoenix, even though nobody watched that shit. They don't know who I am. But that's where it started. And having, as you know, in any approach towards anything, specifically stand up, the more you do it, the more reps you do, the better you get at it. Yeah, I probably hit about, you know, at least maybe 100 games at this point. Maybe not that many, but like call it 70, 80, and been able to make something out of nothing. You go in there with a cameraman, a microphone, and a positive mental attitude, you get some shit done.
Man, man, that's a lot personally investing into yourself. How's the return been?
Not great. It has not been great. Just being real. But like,
not great yet.
Yes. Yeah. This point, I see what I see every time is you see people notice me. You see people like, oh, damn, you're doing this, you're doing that. Like I saw your video of this, I saw you do that. And so that really is something that you can't put a dollar amount on that, but clearly people are noticing what I'm doing. And I've been fortunate to have, we have one of them hit 500,000 from like game two, which was good, like week two of this year. And then I've had one hit 7 million. Which is big on this is on Instagram, and then on TikTok they've done some good things. But like 7 million, that's viral, right? Like that's a lot of people seeing that, and a lot of people noticed me from that. And so, and then also I've gotten some notoriety from being in the Bengals.com, like their weekly recap show that I was on that earlier in the year. So the money hasn't hit back yet, but really I would much rather have the money being something that I'm invested in myself and me doing something that I control and plan that long-term game. Man, I still got bills to pay, bro.
Yeah, no, I understand. How did you come up with another one of the reasons why I brought you on was because like the merch, like how did you come up with the merch idea? Like you did a photo shoot of yourself and then you turned it into merch and you got the beer glass and like how did you come up with the merch? Like matter of fact, all your merch is like it's like dope. I was gonna have you come over here and I was gonna write down word for word what you said.
I appreciate that. Honestly, I think it's just me being in the game this long and like realizing I've been able to observe a lot of my homies' merch and stuff like that. And I'm like, all right, you know, it's really just curating something that you want. And the biggest thing that I want to create is something that I would wear. And I think it's interesting when people like, you know, whatever, some people move weird merch, but like they'll put like a whole joke on the front of their shit. And it's like, I mean, am I going to wear that though? Am I going to wear that in public? And so I really here's what the answer to most of these things are is because you think it's like these big complex things. What I've realized is you got to simplify the stuff. And my merch was like, I'm going to make some dope artwork and put it on a shirt. And I knew I wanted to do the Rogue Warrior thing. I got a homie named Anwar Newton, who's super talented stand up, but also he's a really good graphic designer. I told him what I wanted. And you keep saying I did a photo shoot. That's Photoshop. That's my head on an old wrestler from the 80s named the Road Warrior. And yeah, and that's how good is that? That image though, right? That image is slick. And and so that artwork looks dope. I wanted to make it vintage. I wanted to make it look like an old wrestling shirt, which is something that I rock with. And so I was like, let's do it. And let's put on a black shirt and let's fade it out like it looks like something from the 80s. And, you know, it turned out great. And then the Yum Saying is my podcast is Yum Saying. And if you watch a lot of my stand-up clips or just know me personally, it's just something I say. It's just, you know, a lot of us say things like, you know, there's people down south say, you know what I mean? There's people, you know, in the Bay Area, they say, yada, a lot of different things. I just say, you know what I'm saying? And that's my podcast name. And I always think it's something that people attach to. This is another thing. You can curate things from people will tell you what your merch should be. I put it in. It was a word that I try to figure out what I should say on stand-up clips. You got to write out every word, right? And I was like, well, I don't want to put, you know what I'm saying, because I'm not saying, you know what I'm saying. Right. And so I created that. I just wrote it how I write it, which is just, it's not that crazy, but it's spelled YAHMSAYIN. You know what I'm saying? And it was a word that started getting into my comments on some of the videos that I would post. People would just be like, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I was like, I should probably just put that on a shirt because people are clearly attaching to it in that way. And the other thing is I like being comfy. And so I put it on some sweatpants and some sweatshirt and a crew neck. And that's all I rock is Puma sweats, as I've rocked for 3 years now. And so much so the Puma hits me with a discount every once in a while. Shout out to Puma. But all I rock is sweats. So I was like, man, I'm going to just make some comfy shit that people will rock. And everybody that's hit me with it, they're like, bro, this is so comfortable. And that's all I wanted.
Where'd you get the material? I mean, like, how did you, the merch?
This is the simple shit. This, that Shopify shit. Here. And then I think it's the website is, There's a company or a website that you can curate a lot of shirts from. I think it's called Printful. You can, I mean, but there's a million of these, not even, but like you could do, I've used, what the hell is the other one that I've used in the past? There's a lot of places that you can create prints and put them on a shirt and choose the quality of the shirt. I went with the highest quality of shirt because, again, I don't want to give somebody some merch that they're going to feel all this material's whack or whatever like that. Like, I wanted to make shirts that people would rock, and I want the feedback to be like, yo, this is comfy as fuck. And obviously you want it to look dope and be dope, but like, you definitely want them to be comfortable. That's my biggest thing. I'm rocking, this shit is comfortable. I got my shorts on, are comfortable. I don't like rocking shit that I can't just lounge in. I'm kicking it. I'm about to be 37 next week. You know what I mean? This is comedians in a bed, dude. You, like, I could have been just chilling. I'm on the couch, but like, I feel you on this. So.
No, I definitely understand. Yeah, that's what I was thinking at first. Like, maybe put a joke on there. And then I was like, but that's not, I was just like, that's just too much to be trying to do. And then I was just like, just come up with simple stuff like short, funny, and black. Or I got a new mantra where I just be like, don't be short and bitter. So, you know, something like that. Or
it could be that. It could be, because you don't want to put a whole joke on there. But if there's some phrase that you say, and it makes sense and people will attach to it. Here's something you want to think about too, is will people attach to it without knowing what it is? They don't need to know the context of what it is and be like, oh, that's dope. I don't even know what is behind that. And then somebody will tell them the story behind it, whether it be, oh, there's this comedian in Columbus I rock with, and there's this dude, blah, 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 he's doing this. You got to follow this guy. Then it creates a narrative on its own in that moment. But like, you don't want somebody looking at the shirt like, is that, I guess that's funny. Or, you know, whatever like that. Like, you got to read too much. Then they're just looking at, you know, and then they got it on a woman's rocking the shirt. Then they're just looking at her titties, but it's an excuse because they're just reading the shirt. So you looking at my girl's titties, bro?
No, I understand. Yeah, because I feel like, confused early on. Like, I'm not really a comic that be chasing after money. Like, but I was like, all right, you can definitely make money off of content. But now I see that they're kind of dialing that down. So it was like, there is other ways to make money. And, you know, you just live in America. You got bills, you need to make money. So it's like, you could just sell merch. Like even if you wasn't doing comedy, like, you could sell merch. Like, women at church sell merch.
100%. You can always be, I mean, shoot, go look at, what was his name? Virgil, who passed away a couple years ago. He ended up being the designer for who? Gucci, right? Or something like that. Louis Vuitton, right? So I was looking at his shit early on. And like, I mean, obviously he ended up linking with Kanye early on when the fashion of Kanye was on some crazy shit. But at its core, he was just a dude that like he bought. I saw his first thing ever was he went to some discounted Ralph Lauren shit. He bought these shirts that they were like giving away. They were blank shirts. He put some dope prints on them and just started flipping them. That's how it started. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people didn't know who Virgil was. Now, he's obviously somebody that has a vision that is, you know, he was closer to genius level of thinking on some of his fashion choices. But like, that's pretty simple when you think about it. Like, is there something dope that you think would be cool on a shirt? Put that out there. Obviously, you want your name to be attached to it if you're marketing yourself. So that was why I liked putting my face on the thing and stuff like that. But I also wanted to do something that doesn't have my name attached to it. I want you to just go rock it and not be forced to have my name on your shit either. You know, but it's those are the things that sometimes we overthink things. And I think I do this in comedy all the time too. And people are always like, man, how much you got on your mind before you go up on stage or something like that. The truth is, the better I've gotten, the less I think, or I guess the less I think, the better I've gotten. I should phrase that, because I've done all the things. I've trained myself to be great on stage, and I'm always trying to be greater. But what I know is the more I take a step back and take a deep breath and do less, if that makes sense, or say less, is the better that I can be. Because when I'm overthinking or I'm trying to cram too many words in it, it doesn't work for me. And this is all a personal thing too. Like, other people can counter that and maybe it works for them. But what I know for myself, being somebody that has been an overthinker, being surrounded by family members that typically have overthought things and not acted, and I've seen it within myself too. So I'm not saying it's just other people that I know, but like, I know that thinking less and trusting that you are going to be great in the moment and acting and doing the thing. Those are the key. And when you do the thing and it doesn't work, learn from that thing, but don't overthink the failure. Learn from it. What didn't work, go try it again. Don't overanalyze things and shit like that. I think those are the core. That's the core belief that has gotten me to a lot of the things that you've been asking about for sure.
Yeah. I think, one thing I just realized, like my anxiety is the highest when I do comedy, just for a simple fact, cause I don't know how it's going to go and, or like what's going to happen. So, but I've just been being more of like having the intentions of just being fun and just really just harping on like being my authentic self. Like even like myself, like when I'm singing around the apartment or just blurting out random shit, like when I'm with family and friends, like just doing that more so on stage and not really caring, you know.
Do you feel like how have the return on that been? You feel better about it?
Yeah, it definitely helps. I think like with me, like growing up, I used to say like the most ruthless stuff. Yeah. And like now that I've gotten a little older and wiser, it's like you don't need to say that. But like now that I'm in comedy, it's like, no, let loose. So I'm trying to like tap back into that with not being that same person of who I was back then. You know what I'm saying? So been trying to learn how to do that. But the more that I go up there and I've been doing that, it definitely has been helping. But lately I've just been like, even like trying to just let go more. Cause I'm like, man, I'm so much more funnier off stage, but like, I don't know how to bring that on stage. So what I've just been doing is just like, just letting it go. And I'll be saying some stuff and I'll be getting myself in a hole, but like, I get it out. Like, you know what I'm saying?
And you can figure your way out of that too.
Yeah.
Truly. If you can dig the hole, obviously you don't want to dig the hole, but what you want to do is prove to yourself that if the hole is dug, you can bounce out of that, which makes the beginning of the set much more freer because you know that whatever happens, you've done crazier shit or you've dug out of crazier holes, that it isn't, I'm not that anxious about it because I've been in this situation before and I've been able to do that there. So remember those things. Yeah. And I think what you said about authenticity is the key, and being yourself. So here's what I always knew when I started comedy was I was like, I always thought I would step into every room and I was the funniest person in that room. That's probably not entirely accurate, but that was the mentality I had, right? Mm-hmm. So what I was like, all right, well, how do I take that mentality and that perspective and take it on stage and be that person? And the first couple of years of stand-up, you should not be worried about your jokes as much. You shouldn't be worried about what words you're using. You should need to be yourself on stage more than you've ever been before. Yeah. And the approach towards everything an artist, we are artists at the end of the day. We're telling fucking dick jokes, but like, you know, this, you, I can romanticize about it all that you want, but like, I think comedy is one of the purest forms of art that is still existing and prevalent. And what any artist's exploration, whether you like Kendrick Lamar or whoever your favorite artist is, if you see the ones that continue to elevate throughout their career, what they've consistently done is try to explore their authentic self in their art form more and more and more and more. As they've continued to evolve, they continue to get better. Kendrick Lamar, you could argue his last album was his best album. I still think, you know, I'm a Section 80 guy and, you know, his early shit, but like, you're not wrong if you think these last couple albums were, you know, Jay-Z to me, his last album 444 was the rawest he ever was. If you told me that was your favorite Jay-Z album, I don't think you're that wrong. Outkast, every album Outkast did was like deeper and deeper. And then you go back to the greats. You know, Elton John was still making great albums in his later years. Fucking a lot of people continue to escalate throughout their life. And that's all it is really, that's what comedy is trying to continue to dive within yourself. Whereas a lot of people think you got to look outside yourself for the answers. It's all chilling inside. This shit is just hard to do. And if you can tap into that, you know, you'll never run out of inspiration.
I always tell people, like, that's the advice I give them. Like, I'm only 4 years in. I always tell them, just be your authentic self. Like, younger comic coming to me, I'd be like, just worry about writing every day and just writing about what you did and just be your authentic self. And I think for me, like, I knew that coming in that I had to be my authentic self, but I didn't know that because of comedy. I knew that just because of outside stuff I was going on in my life. Like, I was trying to figure out who I was just as a person, like, just without all the, like, childhood trauma. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So then, like, trying to figure that out and do comedy at the same time was very beneficial for me. And now it's just like, I know who I am. Like, I know who I am, but, like, it's just, I'm still trying to figure out, like, how to, like, portray that, like, on stage, because it's just a lot to think about. Like, you, why didn't they laugh here, you know, and all that type of stuff. But I feel like I've gotten, like, to a good point to where now when I just go up there, my main focus is really like, okay, they didn't laugh, so make a joke about them not laughing, like, you know, counter flipping it so that I always got, like, them laughing and stuff like that. So that's, like, really in this season of my career what I'm focusing on right now.
Yeah, no, it's all about growth. It's all about elevating yourself and figuring it out. And it's a crazy thing what we've dove into too. And the craziest thing is, all you wanted to do when you started comedy was you wanted to dive into being the funniest person you could be. But now, what's the majority of this conversation about? Marketing. It's about t-shirt. It's about merch. It's about ideas on tour and stuff like that. Like, I should have been able to just do a straight up stand up comedy tour. But the fact that I attached it to the football thing has helped elevate the visibility of it. So that's dope. But we got to be so many different things. We got to be the, you know, the producer. You got to be the video editor. You got to be, you know, the merchandise person. You got to be the salesman. It's an all-encompassing thing. And it can be extremely exhausting. But the dope thing is, we every so often get to get up on stage and do this thing that nobody else can do and gets to do. And you can't duplicate that feeling. And, you know, that's why stand-up is the best form of therapy and all that stuff. It's our release. But the things that surround it nowadays are completely different than what it used to be. But, man, it's hard work. But when it pays off, it's dope. That's for sure.
The crazy thing about it, now that you said that, like, all the jobs that I've had kind of, like, helped me to, like, do all of this. Because I didn't know that you would have to do all – even when I started, it wasn't, like, all of this. You know what I'm saying? So now it's, like, with me working the news, like, the editing and all that is easy for me. Like, me being a salesman trying to sell cable, like, I have no problem trying to market this. Like, you know, like, me speaking in front of microphones, doing news. Like, it's crazy. Like, you think about, like, all the stuff that you know, you go through. Like, that's why I tell people all the time, like, when you're trying to figure out what you want to do with your life, like, whatever you're doing right now is preparing you for eventually what you're going to be doing. So you just got to, like, wait and see, you know, and stuff like that. So, but now I love doing comedy, man. It's, I love it because I feel like everybody asks me, like, why I get into it. And I'll be like, man, I used to get in trouble for making jokes. You know what I'm saying? Like, now I can just, I don't got to hold my tongue at work. Like, I have somewhere where I can go be myself. You know what I'm saying?
100%. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a crazy thing. This being able to do this for a living is an insane thing. And we just got to keep pushing, man. It's nuts. It's that, I don't know if you ever read Outliers, Malcolm Gladwell. You ever read that book?
My friend just told me about it. I tried to read it, but, like, the thing with me and books, like, if it's not what I expected it to be, like, in format wise, I get turned off by it real easily. And I was kind of thinking it was going to be like a how-to book, but it's like I guess a novel. And I'm like, bro, what? Like,
it's not a novel. It's a bunch of different stories about super successful people. But to what we're talking about is, and to what you just said is, like, whatever you're doing now is going to prepare you for the thing. It's actually, like, multiple stories about how it's the 10,000 hours perspective. Yeah. And a lot of these people were not successful by accident. They had put the work in, and the timing in which these things occurred in their life, they were perfectly set up to do it because they had already done the 10,000 hours of work. So the fact that they were an outlier in their field or the top 1% in their field wasn't, people are like, oh, you got lucky or something. It's like, no, I put in 10,000 hours. You just never saw it. And when shit was ready, when the spotlight was on or the stuff was magnified, I had already put all the work in. So I was perfectly set up to succeed like that. So to you, to what you're saying, you already done all these different things. And now we're getting to put it all to work. And you've been ready for this moment. That's the thing you got to tell yourself.
I'm going to have to read it again because I'm going to have to try it again because you're the second person that asked me about this book. So it's just sitting on my shelf. I'm going to have to read it again. All right, cool.
It's a perspective thing, really. It's a perspective thing, but also, like, you don't even have to read the whole thing. You can read, like, two or three. There are all these stories about these people. One of them was about the Beatles. One of them was about Bill Gates. It's like Bill Gates was – his mom was, like – she had the hookup at the University of Washington's computer center when computers weren't even a thing that were accessible. So he's been messing with computers since he was like 7 years old. So when he turned into this person, when the whole world changed, he was perfectly set up for this level of, he obviously had a genius mind too, but it's interesting. Cause I've been funny since out the womb. You know what I mean? Right. I was set up for this shit. I've been talking shit since been talking shit.
Now who is on, no, before I go to those set of questions, how was that transition moving from Phoenix to LA to do comedy? You know, because LA is one of those meccas. And I'm also thinking about moving to, not to LA, but just like what do you have to brace for when you about to move to a whole totally different scene?
You definitely have to. So LA specifically, but LA, New York, Chicago, stuff like that. Like what I would say is when you get there, you should be pretty beastly on the mic, and you should also have a network of people that you're already kind of familiar with, tapped into. That's going to help a lot. I luckily had a lot of people in LA that already knew me. I was, one thing when I was in Phoenix was I made it a point where I wanted to be the dude that if you came to Phoenix from whatever market you were in and you wanted to get stage time, you had to know who I was. And if you did, I could be able to get you on any shows there. And so I was the dude in Phoenix. So when I came to LA, which is not that far from Phoenix, everybody kind of already knew me. So being plugged in was super, super advantageous. But to the question of like, how was it? It's funny because I moved here. So I moved here the day that Kobe Bryant died.
Oh, dang.
Which is crazy. So I've literally, this city has not been the same since then.
You killed Kobe?
I might. Hey, come on now. I heard there was a vacancy, bro. I pulled up. And so that was weird. But think about it the other way too. It was January of 2020. Mm-hmm. Then, and I came out here with momentum. I came out here with a show at the Comedy Store. I had a lot of good things kind of moving for me. I came out here as funny as I had felt ever. And in 2 months, COVID and pandemic. So I literally came out here and then it's just they popped my balloon real quick. And so a lot of people probably would have packed up and moved back and stuff. But I was like, man, I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to make this shit work. And I have, and I'm still doing that. And but it's taught me a lot about the mentality I need to have. And L.A. and New York, man, they'll punch you in the mouth. Well, I would say this. New York will punch you in the face and let you know that they're trying to fuck with you. LA will talk shit behind your back and you won't find out for about 6 months. But both of them are fucking with you. And it's real, man. It's hard. It'll make you lock in. It can make you question things, but you got to remember who you are, what you've been, where you're from. And not let this city mess with you like that. That's one I can only speak from moving to LA. Mm-hmm. I know that New York, but I know New York and LA are kind of similar, but New York's mentality towards things is very different. What LA will make you think is you got to be doing what this person's doing, this person's doing, this person's doing. You got to catch up to them and them and them. But to what we've already been talking about, the key, in my opinion, to LA specifically is just do this, do you.
Yeah.
Be you more than anybody else is them, and you will outshine all of them because in LA, everybody's trying to be everybody else. Everybody's trying to jump on this or jump on that. And I think that that is a mentality that can be applicable to in any market. But I know in LA, there's just so many fake motherfuckers that if you are you, if you're doing what we're talking about with authenticity, if you're you to a degree that nobody else is, man, you'll make everybody else uncomfortable. And because they're not used to that and in a good way. So that's something that I was fortunate enough to be mature enough to hold on to and kind of lean into. So,
man, the fact that you stayed, because I know some people from Columbus that moved out there in LA when COVID happened and they came right back. So the fact that you stayed, shout out to you, because
yeah.
I moved back yeah. home with my mom when COVID happened.
Hey, it was some lows out here. It was some lows. And I was out here. My roommate is somebody that ended up, you know, he was super talented when I moved out here, and he completely took off, and is somebody that is dropping a special on Amazon tomorrow, I think, or Thursday. If you know, Trevor Wallace is somebody I moved in with. Okay. And he was somebody that I looked at too. And I was like, oh, that's the hustle. That's the LA hustle. He is one of the hardest working people I know. He's one of the most prolific joke writers or sketch writers that I know too. And that was somebody that I had to, you know, I lived down the hall from him. I was like, damn, this dude's out here changing his life. And it was a perspective where I understood, like, oh yeah, you really got to step it up out here, because this ain't no joke. This is the big time.
Yeah, I go out there every year for Coachella, and I make sure I take a couple days before Coachella start to just go to LA and just hustle, connect, get on shows. And mm-hmm. I had a comic a couple months ago. They were like, man, you know everybody in LA. Like, how are you so connected? You don't even live here. I'm like, dog, I didn't even realize. Like, hey, y'all the ones that mess with me the most. I don't know what to say. Like, it's just, it's just super cool. Like, yeah, I like LA. It's definitely a hustle grind city for sure. For sure. Yeah. For sure.
It'll make you, you'll look at people out here and be like, are they hustling? They're just, the hustle is completely different than the Cincy hustle, than the Ohio hustle for sure. It's a different hustle, but man, you got to hustle for sure.
I'm writing a joke right now where I talk about I need to publicly apologize to my mom because I promised I was gonna get her a house to make it to the NFL league, but now I'm like sitting here doing comedy and stuff like that, and like I really think about it, like the Ohio hustle is different because like my mom still work. So I'm this is like my last resort. I'm trying to write these jokes so my mom like can make it, like don't have to work no more. She don't got no retirement plan.
No. My mom worked till she was she just retired 2 years ago, and she's in like late 70s now. So it's like
crazy. Yeah. All right, as we start to wrap this thing up, man. Michael, before I ask that, what's like one stage that you want to hit that you know when you hit this stage, like you considered yourself that you made it if you haven't already?
You talking about a physical stage?
Yeah. And it could be any stage.
Yeah. That's interesting. I'm definitely somebody that my mother's from back east and shit like that. Like, and I always see people do it, man. If you were Madison Square Garden, would be like, man, something's going right. Things are working. Things are working in the right way. And that would be something that would be just crazy. And the Mecca of, you know, I think New York City, I always have high regard for. That's my favorite city, even if I'm out here in LA. Yeah, that'd be the one, Madison Square Garden.
Who's on your Mount Rushmore for comedy?
So, and then assuming we only got four to pick, George Carlin. Man, it's always tough. I love Chris Rock. Chris Rock's up there for me, which is funny because one of my favorite people to watch right now that I'm fortunate to know is Tony Rock. His brother is one of the funniest dudes doing it right now. But Chris Rock, George Carlin, Norm Macdonald, and I guess we're going dead or alive, obviously. I got two dead people there. And then I know I'm going to forget somebody. And now I got to go with Eddie Murphy, man. Eddie's like, he's not even like, I don't even consider, first of all, his two stand-up specials obviously speak for themselves, but like one of the funniest people. I always have a theory that he can never do stand-up comedy again, which will probably at this point, he will never do stand-up comedy again. But I know he's funnier than everybody alive right now. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have to prove it to me anymore. Eddie Murphy is always somebody that just, I think, is just purely such a funny motherfucker.
Someone said that Delirious and Raw is basically the same special, so he only did one. Do you agree?
You know what? I don't care. I mention it all the time. All I know is it's insane that he was like 21 and 23 when he did them or something like that, or like 22 and 24. Like, his talent, there's pure white lights of humor to me. Mm-hmm. And you know what's funny is I could switch him out for Don Rickles, too, is somebody that I love and I watch a lot, too. Those are always – I always hate the Mount Rushmore's, because you catch me in a couple weeks and I'll probably say something else. Just based, that's how it be. Because I'm right now, I'm like, Bernie Mac isn't on there? I love Bernie Mac. I watch Kings of Comedy just for the last 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Cedric the Entertainer also. But pure white lights of humor, of stand-up specifically, but like just funny motherfuckers no matter what. Don Rickles, Eddie Murphy – Chris Farley are people that come to mind for that. So Eddie's definitely in that. But Carlin is my favorite. If I ever need to go back and just be like, damn, this is what stand up is capable of. George Carlin.
What is some words of motivation that you could give to some comedians that's listening to this right now?
Just keep, don't overthink things and do. I think that doing is the most important thing. I think a lot of comedians that you talk to on the patio, or whatever like that, after shows and shit, man, that we all think too much. But thinking got us to where we are. Thinking is the way our brain works is something that is the reason that the jokes work and stuff like that. But I think a lot of us are scared of taking the next step and doing the thing. And so, you know, do. I don't want you to do more. Or don't do too much. I'm not saying that, right? Don't overextend yourself. But there's an idea that you're thinking about right now and you're just not acting on. Do that thing. And you know what? Treat it just like you do at stand-up with a joke. Do it and fail. And you will learn something from it for the next time you try to run it back. But do the thing. This is what I'm doing right now, which I appreciate all your kind words about what I'm doing with the Road Warrior Tour and shit. Trust me, there are failures going on right now that I will learn from and grow from. But I am happy that I did the thing and I didn't push it off and I'm in the action. So I know that's a lot of words for one mantra, but do. Do.
Message.
Michael, tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
Man, it's good insight. It's good raw conversation about, first of all, I shouldn't be saying Comedians in Bed. Yo, it's that raw, dog. No, we strap up. We strapped up for this. No, Comedians in Bed, man, this is dope. It's a conversation that you're able to get a little bit of insight into the way we think, not only on stage, but off stage. And all of the things that go into pursuing this crazy ass career. And it's a dope perspective. I didn't think I'd be tapping into some of the things that I said on here. So it's cool to be able to kind of reveal some of the things that go into my decisions.
Hey, dog, don't tell nobody, but I almost cried on here. Michael, tell people where they can find you at.
At Turner Comedy for everything, whether it be Instagram, TikTok, X. Shout out to DMX, at Turner Comedy. And then YouTube is at Michael Turner Comedy. And then turnercomedy.com if you want to check the merch out, if you want to see where I'm performing. I'm about halfway through the Road Warrior Tour right now. So come see me. I got Baltimore. I'm in Honolulu soon. A lot of different tour dates coming up. So turnercomedy.com, at Turner Comedy, Michael Turner Comedy for YouTube.
If you want to catch us next week, man, be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel at TYE Comedy. We go live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Or you can follow us on IG at Comedians in Bed Podcast, or you can listen to wherever you listen to podcasts. Michael, I also forgot to tell you, man, I just went to my first wrestling match this weekend. Have you ever been to one?
You know what? I never actually went live. Man. I just did. I know I grew up with like The Rock and Chris Jericho and Triple H and all that, but you like it?
It's totally different. Like, yeah. I think I like it better watching it on TV than in person. Like, Yeah, it's just different. I don't know if it's because I don't like keep up with it now, but it was totally different. Yeah. But I still liked it though. Like I still liked it. It was cool. I see Rey Mysterio's there. He's a lot shorter in person.
Like I think he's like 5'3". Those are also those are some of the best stand-up comedians working. Every night they come up there on the mic and they crush it, and it's just one take. A lot of those are just one take. So I admire wrestlers are some of the most impressive people on a microphone, period. So.
Yeah, I was gonna say when you were saying that comics is one of the like hardest or purest entertainment former entertainment. I was gonna say wrestling was up there too.
And people would typically laugh at both of those suggestions, but if they don't know, I'm completely in the same mentality as you.
Yeah, wrestlers have to do a lot. Do you watch Wrestler on Netflix?
The movie with Mickey Rourke?
No, Mr. It's the
because that shit is sad.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's a sad one. I have seen that.
It's a TV show on Netflix. It's called Wrestler.
Oh no, I haven't. It's I gotta check that.
It follows OVW and it follows Al Snow and like their journey of like trying to.
Oh, it's a documentary style.
Yeah. Okay. But it's a TV show though. But it's really good. Like it shows you like the ins and outs of it. Like it's super dope.
Some of the realest shit I ever saw was in theaters. I watched. I think it's called Beyond the Mat, and it just follows Mick Foley and Jake the Snake. And I'll never forget that. That's some crazy. Hey, wrestlers, man. Some of the realest. Ever.
Shout out to wrestlers, man. But all right, man, we glad we got you on here, Michael, man. We greatly appreciate it. Make sure you hit him up on everything social. We'll see you guys next week.
Appreciate you.